Chicago, there's not many guys. I remember Gazdik's his first game. You know, he just got called up from Dallas. He told us a great story about McTavish calling him up and just saying, hey, ever played in the NHL? No. Well, you'll be playing Tuesday in Edmonton. And he was just like, oh, my goodness. And then he scores on his first shift in his first NHL game, a guy who, you know, as he said, he goes, I wasn't really known for my scoring.
Yeah, you think? It was awesome, and I remember it. The thing I remember about Gazdik, and I would say the same thing about Steve McIntyre, is that they struck me as guys who were just so honored and happy to be getting the opportunity that they were getting. Like, that's a little bit cliche, but a lot of the guys that get to play that are kind of fringe players, they feel that way. But those two, to me, it was like they were just savoring every single day that they possibly could. And yeah, Gazdik, he did that role pretty well, man. He was a good, honest player. He was respected, I think, by other guys who had to do that same role. And I know he was really well liked in the locker room. Didn't he and Taylor Hall end up being fairly tight as well?
Yeah, Taylor Hall and McDavid, the three of them, when McDavid's rookie season.
That's right.
You know, Gazdik, he lived with Hall for 2 years, and the second year, McDavid moved in with him. And so Gazdik said he was the resident chef because those two
at the time
could barely cook toast.
He was just cooking his heart out, feeding the young bucks. And, yeah, I remember he was really well-liked in the locker room. So he was a good guy. I love hearing from those guys that just had to grind to be there, and it meant the world to them to have the opportunity to be there. He was certainly one of those guys.
Shogger, the Toronto Maple Leafs, I said this, I think the biggest challenge for the Maple Leafs organization is to not overreact. It's disappointing how they lost, no question, but they didn't have their starting goalie, they didn't have their second-line center, and they didn't have, you know, one of their top four defensemen, arguably their best defensive defenseman. In a seven-game series, you know, those things catch up to you. Obviously, you know, Marner and Matthews have to produce more, but, you know, to want to trade away one of those guys because of this would seem odd. So what do you think Toronto does in the offseason?
Well, is anybody really talking about they have? And I know it just has to do with the number, right? Not being able to win with two guys at a certain number on your roster, and there's lots of focus on that, but I don't know that trading either one of those guys is the answer. I'm with you. I think you have to try and stay the course to a certain degree. I think it's disappointing, obviously, for them, and being in the center of the media universe out there in Canada, it's going to be loud. It's going to be very loud for them, and it's going to be painful for them, but rightfully so. That was just an absolutely epic collapse. So what do you do? I mean, they've got lots of flexibility just in terms of being able to make some personnel decisions. They've got, you know, a fair number of guys that are coming off of their roster, so they can change out the supporting mix if they want to. But I would agree. I think I agree with you, Greg. I think you need to not overreact. You need to stay the course. You need to realize that Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and John Tavares are an exceptionally good core. Recognize not having Tavares in that situation is massive. I mean, they needed a calming influence, but they needed a veteran calming influence from somebody who was going to be on the ice all the time, a lot more up front. He would have made a big difference in that situation. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they need to absolutely panic. You explore all options, right, and you see if you can make your team better through some trades and such, but I don't think anything has to be done to any one of those three players for them to have any chance of success.
No, the problem is they don't have a ton of cap space, but, you know, they're going to have to find a number one goalie. I just don't think Jack Campbell's a number one goalie. My own opinion, I know I look at his save percentage and all that stuff. Montreal is not the most gifted offensive team, but to me it's the goals he let in were just, you know, there's too many weak ones at key times in that series. And I don't think you can go into Jack Campbell as your number one goaltender if you want to be a legit cup contender. It's just, you know, you look at the teams now in the Elite Eight, look how many of them either have a guy who's won a Vezina or being a Vezina finalist. The only team that doesn't is Carolina. Now, Nedeljkovic has had an unreal season, but, you know, I don't think it's a massive surprise there. You know, top goaltending can definitely help you. Meanwhile, you got Montreal moving on. Now they'll face Winnipeg. You know, Winnipeg's extremely rested. What do you make of this series in the North, in between the 3 and 4 seed, Winnipeg and Montreal?
What was the season series between those two? I'm not sure if you pulled that today.
6-3
I haven't looked
Winnipeg.
At it. It was 6-3 Winnipeg. Hey,
6-3
yeah, but
Winnipeg.
I mean, for what that matters. I mean, for Winnipeg showed in the first round that doesn't have to mean a hill of beans. I mean, is Montreal not getting enough credit? Are they a better team than people are suggesting that they are? Or did Toronto just shoot themselves in the foot and lose to a team they had absolutely no business losing to? I think Winnipeg is the deeper team. I think Winnipeg's the better team. I think that, you know, lines 1 through 4 and you know, Montreal's got some nice D-men, but I think Winnipeg, with what they showed in the first round, they just seem deeper. So I think it's advantaged them. But I don't know. Montreal's kind of got something going. And it was funny, you know, watching the broadcast last night and listening to Bieksa talk. I can't remember when he was saying it, but he was talking about Corey Perry. And this will annoy Oilers fans, because generally Oilers fans don't love Corey Perry. He's just won everywhere he goes. Like, every single place he goes, they just win. And it kind of, for whatever reason, follows him around, and he finds a way to be in the fray when things matter. And once again, he's in the fray when things matter. So there's just something about him and about what Montreal's got going on right now that it, I don't know, makes it feel like they're capable of things that their roster construction suggests maybe they shouldn't be. So I'm going to take Winnipeg in the series, but I kind of look at Montreal and go like, huh, interesting. I wonder how far they can take that.
Yeah, I'm curious how many goals we're going to see with Hellebuck and Price and the way they're playing.
That'll be a great duel, too. That'll be a really good duel. Yeah. I mean, just two guys right at the top of their game, and Hellebuck, you know, just was such a difference maker in that opening round series, and they've had a bit of a layoff here, but I'm sure he'll be fine and ready to go, and goaltending will be something to watch for sure.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, the Edmonton Oilers, unless I missed something today, it looks like Blue Mel was who they drafted back in 2019, didn't sign today. So he's obviously, you know, and I'm not sure that's a big deal, but, you know, there's lots of teams around the league that you see guys that were drafted a few years later. And, you know, Matei Blue Mel, who was drafted, I think, in the fourth round in 2019, not signed yet by the Edmonton Oilers. And
100th overall.
Right away. Yeah. And I think that, yeah, the deadline's done. So he'll move on. But the rest of those guys from that draft class, either A, don't have to be signed. Right. So, you know, like Denizen and Mazura. So, you know, with those guys, they still own their rights. But you look at a guy like Raphael Lavoie, who did sign earlier for the Edmonton Oilers. What's like, obviously he's going to spend some time in the American League. I think a full season for sure. Kind of like Ryan McLeod, maybe even two. But what do you make of Raphael Lavoie? Do you think this guy has top six potential? Is he more of a bottom six guy long term for Edmonton?
Yeah. So, I don't really want to put a stamp on him yet because, you know, what I like to see is, kids this age, they make so much progress from one summer to another. And I think you can kind of tell when they come into camp where they fit in and how they look, and they measure themselves against, you know, the NHL players, and you can sort of get a feel for it in some of the scrimmages. And I just haven't seen enough of him to really be able to make a call on that. You look at his pedigree, you look where he was drafted. I mean, if he ends up being a third or fourth line player, that's just fine. You need valuable guys like that. He's 6'3", you know, a couple hundred pounds, bigger game. I think there's lots of potential there. You know, and to put up 10 points in 19 AHL games is, you know, that's showing something. You know, not everybody goes out and does that right away when they turn pro. So, yeah, I think there's something there. But, Greg, I'm not sure yet what to say, where to project him or what to say. You talk to people in the organization, they're really high on him. They like him a lot. They feel really good about him. I know Craig Button's pretty high on him as well. Right shot center, that's something that matters. But I think it's a full season in the American Hockey League. You know, see if he's up to speed. See at what pace he can produce points at the American Hockey League over the course of a full year before you really sort of pigeonhole him. But I think 10 points in his first 19 AHL games says something, don't you?
Oh, no, I like Lavoie. I watched him. I think he's a player that, you know, they project him to be a top nine winger. At what rank remains to be seen, but that's where they see him. Not now, not right away. Just like Dylan Holloway. I'm going to say it right now, Shogger. I think Dylan Holloway is starting in the American League and actually absolutely blows the doors off in training camp. Like, he's going to have to, and preseason games, everybody gets way too excited. Years over Kyler Yamamoto, I'm like, I don't care what he does in the first two preseason games, to be honest, because it's irrelevant. They're not close to NHL teams. I really think that Dylan Holloway is likely to start in the American League, and there's nothing wrong with that, and I could see him maybe getting a recall, you know, 20, 10, 30 games in, but I think he's going to start in the American League.
Yeah, and I would think the same thing, but I don't know who he's got to leapfrog yet. I mean, we don't know yet what it looks like lined up on that left side. We don't know how many NHL players the Oilers are clearly going to stack in front of him. And we'll learn through free agency how the Oilers feel about Dylan Holloway's, you know, if they're ready to be patient with him and have him beat. That's just the way Ken Holland operates, so I would assume as much. It's got to be tempting to have players who you think might be ready, and on entry-level deals, to just pencil them in because the number looks so much better. But I think that could be a little bit dangerous. So between McLeod and Holloway up front, between Bouchard, Broberg on the back end, you see how everybody looks in camp, and I would suggest you probably only have space for a rookie up front and a rookie on the back, and see where it's at with those guys. I think Holloway, I think he's going to have to leapfrog legit NHL players to be able to be there. I think that's what they want to see from him. But if he comes in and does enough that you look silly sending him down, I don't think you can ignore that. You know, you have to pay attention and you have to really, I agree with you, the first few exhibition games it's different. But if he goes deep into exhibition season and he's playing well and the guy he can skate like crazy and he's doing all the things you want, I don't think you can necessarily ignore that either.
No, you can't ignore it. I just think too often, you know, like I remember Yamamoto and every year, oh, geez, look at him, great. And he got nine games and did nothing. And there's lots of other guys that do that because it is hard. And the NHL is, like Strud said, he thinks preseason games are like 70% of a regular season game.
Yep.
You know, even the last few, they're just, it's not the same at all. The Oilers bottom six, I expect a massive overhaul. I look at I think Ryan McLeod's in your bottom six. I think that ideally he starts your fourth line center. I think Josh Archibald is there and Zach Cassian. And after that, I think the other three spots and even like the 13th and 14th forward, you might see, Jajar Kera maybe in there, you know, maybe Devin Shore. I don't think you'll see five of those eight spots. I think you might only see four. So I think you're going to see four new faces when I consider bottom six and the extra forwards. What about you?
And you think Turris in the American League?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, unless Kyle Turris has, you know, like he looks great. Like he might be your 14th forward, I guess. But I don't know what I saw this year. I'd be surprised by that.
And where do you have Cassian?
I have Cassian and Archibald as your bottom six right winger. But I'll say this about Cassian. I think Zach Cassian and Yamamoto are going to push each other. I don't think Kyler Yamamoto is a lock automatically to be a regular every day in your top six next season. I think if Cassian can get his head on and not worry about his contract, he's got a chance to push and those two guys rotate from your second to third line.
Yeah, the right side is interesting, hey, because you've got Archibald, who on a real good team is a number four winger, pushing Cassian. And you got Cassian pushing Yamamoto, and then you got Puljujärvi who came in and had a really good year. Now, Puljujärvi is the one who showed signs this year of being able to kind of be that top-line guy, that complimentary player for McDavid that can stick in that spot. So you put him there. But really, between those other three guys, you could probably put any of them on any one of the lines, and we've seen that before. I would say Cassian has spent more time in the top six than Archibald. Yamamoto's gotten tons of opportunity, but I think Kyler Yamamoto needs to, if he's a third line right winger, I think that needs to be okay. I think he needs to, you know, be not necessarily forced into that top six space if the offense isn't coming for him. You know, he had that really nice run offensively, but he's gone for long stretches in his career where he hasn't produced like a top six winger. So he's still a good player. He's still valuable. Coach likes him, and he does lots of good things out there. But if he's not a top six guy, doesn't mean that he's a failure. So you got Puljujarvi ahead of him right now. You got the opportunity. You know, Cassian, when he's on his game, can play ahead of him. And then you got Archibald. They're actually not too bad on the right side, but just they don't have the lock stock two top six right wingers. They've got maybe one. And then a bunch of, you know, three guys that are kind of in that third line range.
And quickly, what do you think of the Elks?
You know, I'll be honest with you. As the day is going on, it is sort of growing on me. I said on the morning show this morning, it wasn't my favorite, but I was open to the idea that it could grow on me. I thought the presentation, the way they kind of unveiled the logo, reminded me of the way the Kraken did, where they sort of drew the logo backwards and then did the eye last. And when I first saw the logo, I was like, oh, I didn't mind it. So I didn't like it this morning. It wasn't my favorite. This afternoon, it's kind of growing on me, but I'm staying open to the idea that I may end up really liking it. And I think that's, if you're the organization, that's about all you can ask fans to do. Just stick with it and don't write it off on day one. I think it will grow on people. I think it's smart the way they've done it, though, because they've kept the double E. They've got two separate logos that will be identifiable with the franchise, just strictly the antler, and then the whole head with the antler. So there's lots of merchandising opportunities for them, and let's be honest, that's what the CFL needs. They need to sell merchandise, and they need to have people spending money. And so I think it was smart the way they did it and gave new merchandising and logo opportunities. I don't mind it, man. But how did you feel about it?
Yeah, you know what? I like the logo. I'm just happy they picked a name. I don't get too caught up in the Elks or Elk. People are freaking out. I'm like, hey, people call them the Oil all the time. Right?
Why does that matter? The S is bugging people?
Oh, some people, yeah, they get fired up about it. The best was people saying it's not grammatically correct. But then when you talk to, you know, you do a little research, actually it is grammatically correct. It's not popular. It's not used often, but it's a noun, right?
Like Chris Preston said they actually talked to a linguistic expert. Mm-hmm. And they were told, yeah, I know you're good. Like, that's the proper form that you're trying to use it. And I don't know. I mean, whatever. You know what? I think from their standpoint, people are talking about it. Some will love it. Some will hate it. Just keep talking about it. And when the season is close to beginning, I'm sure they're thinking, please just buy a shirt or something. And man, fingers crossed, my friend. Hopefully we are sitting in the press box staring out over a whole bunch of healthy people watching games again. It's been far too long. So call them whatever you want. Let's get them on the field and get it going.